Well, it's all, well, I say it's August. It's already September. I don't know where the year went.
I don't know.
Yeah,
they say the older you get, the faster it goes, and that's
true. Well, my grandfather used to tell me that all the time, and it's true.
The TNT.
And it's the slower you get,
the TNT is going to open up in 4 or 5 days.
Yes.
Over here.
Yes.
And I want to go hunt.
Do you hunt all 60 days?
No, it's only 7 days this season. The other season is for 40 days.
Okay.
The big season.
All right. Well, let us introduce ourselves and we'll tell you what we're interested in.
Okay.
My name's Don Davis. I've retired.
Don Davis.
Don Davis.
You were related to Jimmy Davis?
No. No, and I don't sing You Are My Sunshine. I got to retire from LSU for a weekend.
Okay.
And I went back to work, but only one day a week. And we'll, Carl is at the University of Louisiana Lafayette.
Also retired.
And we don't really have an agenda. We've already done that. Mm-hmm. But we've decided after Katrina and Rita, and this is a book that we both put together. It deals with coastal Louisiana. And putting this together, we understood that there was an awful lot of stories that have not been captured, or as Carl would like to has said many times, the most important information you can be provided us is right here between the two ears.
That's it.
And not everything's been written.
No.
So what we're trying to do,
and unlike most people, we understand that the people who live here are the real experts.
Right. Well,
you know, so that's why we're here, is to sit at your feet and learn from you.
Y'all ready?
Well, we're almost.
Okay.
We have a procedural matter.
We have
first
to keep
of all,
the lawyers happy.
Yes. Let me tell you, I was raised in the marshes.
Well, let them finish what they got to do.
Yeah, because we can't use this information. Yes, you say it's okay to use it.
And we're glad you brought your wife. Because
I'm glad I brought her too.
Well,
she can straighten me out on something.
Well, the thing is, we never hear the female story.
Well.
So let's get our procedural things done
first. I never
first.
Grew up down there.
That's all right. There's stories you know.
Yeah, but you want shrimp?
Yeah.
Alligator hunting with
you.
Yeah. First thing, we are taking all of these recordings and we're putting them at the LSU, at the University in Lafayette, and at Louisiana Sea Grant so that they can
be
used.
I used to go over there and skin an alligator and cook it.
Well,
yeah. All right.
There you go. What we're doing is putting the materials out there so that people can study the marshes now and in the future. So what we'd like to do is get both of you to get your permission to put these materials at those places and to make them available to people who want to study the coast and the people who live here.
And give us your name
and
your date of birth. And permission to do that. We'll start with the mail first.
When you're ready.
Right now.
We're ready.
Go
press the go button now.
My name is Jerry Alfonso. I was born in 1932, October 24th. And I was born in the Depression. And, well, I didn't know nothing about it. I was born, a little baby. And it was hard.
Do we have your permission to...
Yeah, you can do what you want with.
All right. Now, 1 minute.
Ramona Alfonso, and it's Ramona. And I was born March 20th, 1944.
I'm 1 year older than you are.
See that?
And I'm retired, too.
Yes. I tell everybody I've been tired. Now I get to be retired. Now, Mr. Alfonso, tell us your story.
Well, I don't know where to start. I'm going to start when I was a kid.
Good.
My daddy used to take me out to a camp. And the camp he used to take me out to, you know how them, you see them westerns with their old shacks they're staying? That's where we were staying in. But they had cracks in them, so they had to put felt paper all around them.
And weren't they on pylons?
No. It was on posts that high, and
did the paper keep the wind out in the winter?
No, they put the felt paper all around and put it around and put some more around and nail it with tacks. You see, and then the thick felt paper, the 90 pound felt paper, 90 pound thing they used to call, they put it on the roof, you see? And my dad used to put it on the roof, and when he lap it over like that, he put tar. He take it, they had a little can of tar, he put some tar in there and stick it, mm-hmm. where the rain couldn't get in. And the camp was made like this, you see? In the A-frame?
Right.
Okay. You could see the rafters and everything. They had no nothing in the ceiling to.
Now this was a trapping camp.
Yeah, and we stayed there 3.5 months. Okay. Well, as I got older, I stayed there, and as I got older, when I got a little older, I guess about 9 years old, 10 years old. My brother was a year younger than me, Vernon, our father. And we had about 10 traps. We used to go trapping by the edge of the canal, the edge of the bay and all that. And so one day we went and we set the trap and we just kept them there. And we had a board, a little board to put on the ground to step on a trap to be able to set it. We couldn't set it with our hands because we were too young. And one trap was pulled in a hole, and the chain had the cane reached stuck in that ring of the trap, and the chain was stretched out in the hole. So I went down in the hole with my hand, and I grabbed the spring of the trap, and I've done that. Because if you pull it too hard and the muskrat's caught by the foot, it might break his foot off, you see, and it go off, so I'm pulling it easy. And it was a cottonmouth about that big around, cottonmouth moccasin. He was caught right there by the neck. That's why he didn't bite me. He was caught by the neck. He had his mouth open. So we grabbed the trap by the ring. We started running to the camp. I said, Mama, in Spanish, tengo un Congo, tenemos un Congo. We got a Congo. Congo was a cottonmouth. Tenemos un Congo, Mama, tenemos un Congo. Mama didn't understand. She understood that a Congo bit us. And she didn't know what to do. So we come to the camp. And she said, kill it. Kill it right now. So we kill it, went back and set the trap again. Every day we were doing that. And I grew up like that. And as I got older, my daddy gave me more trap, more trap, more trap. And
how many traps was your daddy running?
My daddy was running 250, and I was running 250 as I got older.
Right.
My brothers wasn't trapping like me, but they weren't as good trappers as I was. They didn't have that many traps. Yeah. My dad used to give me the biggest piece of land. We was trapping for the Delacroix Corporation, mm-hmm. Dotson and them people.
Right.
All right. And I was trapping, and I had 200 traps like this. Around like that, big round, and I had 50 traps in the middle. You see? And when you trap, you close in. You trap, you got trapped, let's say from here to the middle of this building. And then you trap from trap to trap, and then from trap to trap, and you start catching little ones, you move in. You move in, you move in, you move in, and while you're catching big ones. And when you move in plenty, then your trap is coming to one point, and then some of them hit together, and you got to pick some of them up. Because you got too many, because the ring is smaller. You see, because you're moving in. And by the time the winter ended, all your traps are in the middle.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we figure that out before we put the trap, how long is it going to take it to trap. And well, my daddy did that before me, you know. I learned with him. His name was Martin Alfonso.
Now, how many of your family members went to the camp?
Oh, my grandpa, Willie, Rogelio Willie Alfonso, and my man, her name was Carmela, and Uncle Jose, Jordan Alfonso, and his wife named Marie. And they were camping in a bayou called Bayou Cypre, Cypress Bayou. Cypre is Cypress.
Cypress.
By Yosefa is Cypress by. They had a camp going in the turn, they had a camp on that side. And my dad used to take us over there. And during the war, I had a 20-gauge shotgun, crack barrel. That's what I used to hunt with. I was a young kid, about 11 years old, like that. And every time we went over there, my grandpa gave me a box of shells. During the war, I don't know where he got the shell from, but he always gave me a box of shells, 25 shells. He knew I liked to hunt, you know? And I enjoyed going to the camp. I enjoyed seeing him, because I love my grandfather. My both grandfather, my dad almost fought the Red. And my grandfather, on my daddy's side, they had nobody that I seen could shoot better than him. Nobody. When he shoot a snipe, one hand behind his back, bah, never miss it. For a 20-gauge. One hand behind his back. I don't know why he done that, but he always did do that with snipe. Now with ducks, he leave them come close and call them and call them and call them and get together, bop, three in one shot, bop, two in the other shot. He always did brag, just like my daddy, bring back more ducks than shells he shot. Always did. And my grandpa said, when you shoot a duck, when you shoot two ducks in one shot, you save one shell. Mm-hmm. And he always did tell me that, you know. And he said, that's what you got to learn. So I didn't know that. Of course, I was hunting. And then my daddy brought me a double-barrel shotgun. Double-barrel shotgun. It was a Parker, neighbor Parker brother. That's a good gun.
Oh, yes.
I had that. And I had it for years. I hunted with him, my daddy hunted with him, my brother hunted with him. And it never misfired. And I went hunting with that. And my daddy hunted with him. And when my daddy hunted, he used to find the ducks, look for them. And when he see a school of ducks, a lot of ducks in one spot, the next morning he was right there. He had to drag the pirogues sometimes a long ways and kill the ducks. Then he had all them ducks to drag in the pirogue back. That was a lot of weight. And they're selling, and that's all we had to do. You see, we had 1 month between trapper season and shrimping season. We had 1 month.
Now, you shoot them for people in New Orleans?
What's that?
Were they doing any hunting for people in New Orleans you talked about?
No, we were selling them. And we were selling to people down there from New Orleans coming to get them.
Okay.
What we used to do, we used to take them like this and pluck the feathers right here from leg to leg. Pluck like that and gut them.
Mm-hmm.
Split it like that and gut them. Take the heart, get it, and live out, and everything, and guts, and wash them real good. And we tie two together like this and hang them up on a clothesline, let them drip. And if it was cold, we didn't have to put them on ice. Now, if it was hot, we had to put them on ice. And we call them up, they come down and buy them
mm-hmm.
right away. They come right away and buy them. And they used to give us, for the malice, they used to give us 2.5 a pair. For the pintail, $2 a pair. For the gray duck, $1.75 a pair. For the spoonbill, teal duck, and dough grease, $1 a pair. And for the wigeon, $1.50 a pair. Because a widgeon is big as a gray duck, you see.
Mm-hmm.
A widgeon got a small bill, but he's big as a gray duck.
Tell them what y'all used to do in the camp at night. Play the harmonica, self-taught.
My daddy used to play the harmonica. Oh, he could play it. He couldn't write his name, but he could play that harmonica, make it talk. And then, him and my cousin, his name was Richard Alfonso. We used to call him Sarapio. Sarapio. That's what we used to call him. Everybody called him that. And they went to the town, to New Orleans. And my daddy, he was drinking. So they went and bought a guitar. My daddy was talking around Woolworth. I don't know what store they had then. And he was banging on the guitar and saying, my daddy could sing. And he was singing, and the people got around him like that. And so I said, he's good now. He's good. He can really good. He can really sing. And the people got around him and said, yeah, he's good, yeah. My daddy knew the song because he heard him on the radio, and he learned them. He used to like Ernest Dubb. That was his name.
Ernest?
And Jimmy Rogers. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Jimmy Rogers was the first country and western singer that I know, that I heard about. And the yodeling, you know?
Right.
And my daddy used to yodel, too. And he sang at the camp.
Now, he learned all this on the, listening to the radio?
All this listening mm-hmm. to the radio. And he used to stay at the camp. And we all get around with that. He hit that guitar and sing. I mean, sing. And we all enjoyed it, you know, watching him. And we'd rather watch him than hear on the radio. And it was about 10 o'clock at night while we had to go back to bed. And one day, we went for Halloween night to clean the camp out. You know, Halloween before the winter time. We went to clean the camp. And Papa said, well, y'all go to bed. And we went to bed at 3 o'clock that morning. I got up and I stepped on a snake. I stepped on his head. And the body was hitting my leg. And I said, Papa, I used to call him Papa. Papa, I'm stepping on a snake. Don't get off of it, stay like that. He went and lit the lamp. We had a kerosene lamp. He got Mama's scrubbing brush, that big. He take your feet off, bop, 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 bop. He killed the snake, he said, throw it outside. Yeah.
Yeah.
Tell him about the time when you were and your first wife and Cookie and her husband.
You see, well, that was years later. My mama said, I was married and I had two kids. And mama said, well, Jerry, we ain't got enough land for you all, for you to trap. You better ask Mr. Adam and see if he can give you some land to trap. I said, well, I was thinking about my brother-in-law, because we used to shrimp together and all. You know, he had his boat and I had mine. And his name was James Anglada. Because my wife was named Vima Anglada, his sister. She was older than him. And she was the oldest one in the family. And, I said, Mr. Adam, I'd like to get some land to trap. Because Mama said, they ain't got enough land over there. He said, well, he told me where to go. He just let me know if we got rats there. So I went there. But I can only buy you. No, the 40 Upper Canal off of Canoven Bayou on the left side, when it gets to the pipeline, they had a point there. So he said, walk in there, and I went and walk in there. Muskrat Hills was like that, all over, muskrats all over. And I said, Mr. Adam, I'd like to have a little piece of land for James to trap too, my brother-in-law. He know that I trap? I said, oh yeah. James trapped behind the house for 15, 20 traps, that's it. I said, oh yeah, he know that trap. But James was a good worker, you know. I know he could do it. It's all right. So he gave me some land. And James went another piece. He had to go by boat, a little boat that he had. And we were putting a wallpaper in the camp. Wallpaper that was kind of heavy, you had to tack it with a tack, you know, in the camp mm-hmm. to make it look good, you know. And she said, Jerry,
Cookie.
She, I've seen her today.
His cousin, his sister-in-law, all in
she
one.
She said, Jerry, they got a lump in the wallpaper. I said, put a tack in. She said, I put a tack in it, but it moves. I said, put another tack in it. And the snake come out under the wallpaper. About 6 feet long, it was a rat snake. It wasn't a mean snake. It wasn't a bad snake. But if you jam him, it'll bite you. And he went under the camp, and I took the shotgun, and I went under the camp like that, and I seen part of myself. Pow! Cut that piece off the snake. Okay, the snake went in the hole. I couldn't get it. So we had a outdoor toilet. We had an outdoor toilet with two holes, a seat with two holes, and one hole there and one hole there. Okay. We built it like that. Had a hole in the ground, you know. And, Vilma went to the toilet that morning. She said, "Jerry, they got a snake in the toilet." I said, "Where is that?" She said, "He's on top of the seat." And there was the snake that I shot with a piece of his tail cut off. And I went there, and I took the hatchet, and I hit him in the head with the hatchet, cut the head off, and swept the snake and head and everything in the toilet hole. I said, "He can't bite you now. He's in the toilet, he got his head cut off. Don't worry about him." Okay. I trapped along the 40-yard canal, and along the 40-yard canal in the marsh. I ain't never seen cottonmouth like they had there. Never in my life, never seen cottonmouth like they had there. I killed the one that was in front of me, but the one in front of me, I never killed him because I won't be able to run my trap. And the one in front of me, I killed him and throw him on the side. And, I used to skin. When I got a load in my back, I skin. And you skin the muskrat, and you throw the carcass away to the pond, the little pond that had alligators there, and if not, just throw it out there, and the boys would eat it. Nothing went to waste. And, So I done that. That was my special spot, the skin. And I had three or four spots like that. So, I'm sitting there, and I felt something right there on my backside. They had a frost that morning. And I was sitting there, looked like I warmed the nest up. And there was a cottonmouth come out right inside of me. So, look at this thing. And he was half frozen, like, you know? So I took the knife, and I opened the knife, and I cut his head, you know? He went rolling like that.
It was pretty dangerous, that thing.
Oh, yeah.
That was it. And let me tell you, the closest time I almost got bit, Charlie Alfonso was there, they call him Jalito. Well, he come there, and he had Mr. Adam for some land. Mr. Adam gave him some land. All right. Well, he never had many right there. He trapped, and the highest date was 84, and he kept going down. And I didn't have many right. So he picked up the trap from that. And I told Mr. Adam, "Can I go where Charlie do what?" He said, "Yeah, I want to put trap there." I'm carrying 50 cane reams on my back, canes, you know?
Right.
And James carrying 50. I said, "James, you want me to stick my 50 first or you stick your 50 first?" "No, you stick your 50 first." And we're going about it from here in the middle of them. Sticking the cane. And the bundle got loose, you know? I took some cane out of the bundle, got loose, so I threw the bundle down and tightened the rope again, the little string. And I threw it on the cottonmouth. I didn't know. When I grabbed the bundle of cane and I pulled on the string, the cottonmouth went there and grabbed the cane there and the poison went all over my hand. I mean, you know, it was like clabbing milk. It was clear with white spots. Clabbing milk. All over my hand. I thought, "James, look, I killed him." We kept on putting the cane down. So I went and I got some mud out of my muskrat hole and I washed my hands. Couldn't get the smell off. Then I got the clay mud way down in, I washed my hands. Couldn't get the smell off. Every time I carried the cane, I could smell it, you know? And it's a smell that I ain't never smelled before. And if you smell that, you won't forget it. And we stuck all the cane, we went to the camp. I washed my hands with soap. Real good. Don't get the smell out. My wife had perfume. I put perfume on my hand. Don't get the smell out. You know what got the smell off? Gasoline. I put gasoline on it. And gasoline gets in the pool right away. I put gasoline on it and washed my hand with gasoline for a while. And then I washed it with soap. Because gasoline burn you if you leave
right.
it there.
Right.
That got the smell on. And, that's the closest I ever come. That much it would have beat me. That much more. A half inch more. He'd have got me. And it wasn't that big. It was about that big. But the poison,
yeah.
And it wasn't a male. It was a female. You see, the male is dark. It's black. The female is kind of brownish looking. But when you're coming in the morning walking, when you get to him, he got his mouth open, his white mouth. If it wasn't before his white mouth, you wouldn't see him. But his white mouth is like that, open, looking right at you like that, all the way. It's open like that. And he's ready. If he ain't gonna bite you, you could put your foot right there, he ain't gonna bite you. But if you touch the grass and the grass touches him, then he'll bite you, because he thinks that you're touching him. And a cotton rock is bad. And then I like a rattlesnake. A rattlesnake, when you can reach, he's gonna get you. And they had a copperhead, them little copperhead. We call them ground rattles. Copperhead, they bad too. And they had plenty of them. But the color of the leaves, you know, when I was trapping by the mung bushes and I was trapping for minks and all that, they're the color of the leaves. You gotta watch them. They're a little roll like this. They roll up like this, curl up like this, a little roll like that. And if you get close to them, they'll bite you. And they're poison.
Can I say something?
What?
His mother was a jack of all trades.
Mama could do anything.
Women from down near did everything. And my father-in-law at one time got very ill. And he couldn't run his traps. And they didn't want the animals to rot. My mother-in-law ran the traps with the rat bag on her back.
I'm Morphe.
And she got all the traps run. And to me, she was really strong. And she was a little bitty thing. She wasn't even 5 feet tall.
Let me tell you what happened. My Aunt Morphe, her name was Florence. What do you call her, Morphe? She was a mama. And mama had the rat bag. And they had a mink in the trap. And she hit the mink. She thought she'd kill it. She put the mink in the trap and banged the mink. Was on her back. He was falling on her shoulder. And said, Morphe, you gonna bite me. And Morphe hit him, put him back in the rat bag. And my grandpa was trapping with my daddy. My grandpa took him and drowned him when they got to the camp. Okay. And Mama could do anything. She could fasten that. If a trawl broke in 3 pieces, she'd fix it. I broke one.
She was one of the top ones of repairing a net down there.
I broke
she
one
crocheted,
of the things. And
she
she'd come down
she
to spread
sewed.
It out in the yard. She said, oh, here. She started drawing. Put it right back together like it was.
When they were children, she made their clothes. I don't know how she did it, because she baked bread,
Aunt
she cooked.
Doobie.
And she had all kind of other stuff to do with them.
Entra, Doogie.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you all?
Hi.
Como está, mijo?
How you been?
Fine, and you?
Yeah.
So, anyway.
I'm going to Carl Brosser, sir. Did you meet you?
Doogie Robin.
Don Davis, we met at your house.
Yeah, right.
With your sons.
Hi.
Yeah, it's a long time ago.
And,
yeah, we were sitting in Alluvial City.
And
yeah.
I went.
Please, sir, have a seat.
Please have a seat.
Well, we caught one winter. We caught 13,000 muskrat, 12,600. We caught that year. My grandpa built me a boat. I had a little money. Man. We was getting 52 cents a piece for the muskrat, and we had to pay 35%. 35 to the land company, $35 out of 100. We was getting 65, they were getting 35. But we had to buy everything, all our expense. But we made money. And that year, my grandpa built me a boat. I asked my grandpa, I said, Grandpa, you want to build me a boat? He said, what size? I said, I want it 24 feet long, 8 feet wide. At that time, there was a big skiff, you know. So he said, come on, you help me? I said, yeah. He wrote the number down. He couldn't write name. He wrote the number down on a piece of paper. Said, "Go to Riverside Lumberyard. Tell a nigger in there not to give you no sack." Well, that's the way it was. Black man. Tell a black man not to give you no sack. The sap ain't no good, you know. Mm-hmm. It's soft. So I'm looking. I said, "Look, I don't want no sap." And was trying to stick me with sap. You know what I'm saying? And so I bought the lumber, and some of it had sap. And my grandpa used that on the deck, instead of on the bottom and the side. Okay, he built a boat. James Savinay helped him, and I helped him, and all that. And he built it. All right. They had a man named Walter Moultrie. He used to have the Checker Cab Company in New Orleans. And he's our friend. All right. He said, "Look, you got a boat? I got a motor for you. I got a Plymouth motor." I said, "Yeah." He brought the motor, and he had a transmission that big. I said, "Mr. Moultrie, I can't use that motor. I got the transmission too long." So he went and brought a truck transmission that big with the ship on top. Okay. I put that in there, and I went to Mr. Yahtzee on Saint Rock, and I had the coupling turned down and everything turned down, two coupling and the shaft and everything in there, picked right. Got everything done, bought the strut and put it in there, and I was shrimping, and got the shrimp. My uncle built me a trawl, Vito Perez. He built me a trawl, he made me a trawl 35 feet long, flat trawl. All right, I was catching shrimp, but Larry Gonzalez said, "Jerry, I can take that trawl and make a balloon trawl, and you catch way more." And he was right. So he come home and he started taking the trawl apart here and there, and throwing here and there, got a little bit of webbing. He said, "Put chain all the way, hanging chain like that, in a little line, on the bottom line." Oh man, I caught some shrimp with that trawl. Okay, then I shrimp, my wife shrimp with me. Every morning going out, she had a pillow. She used to lay down and cover with a blanket going out. And the man, the motor had a hot manifold. I used to run it with a hot manifold. But right back in the manifold, I had a half inch pipe where the water used to go in, and the exhaust wasn't hot going out the back of the boat. But my wife just stayed right, lay down right close to the hot manifold, and she was warm, you know, going out. Okay, we were strolling outside the Iron Bank. You know what that's like. And shrimping out there, they had big shrimp, 16-20. And that's just a door, they're long. I lock it with a lock.
I don't know.
I don't know how to turn it off either. And I caught shrimp with that trawl, and I made money. And then I made enough money to raise it up, make it higher. I told my brother-in-law, I said, "I want to make it 6 inches higher. I want to make the boat higher." And when you make it higher, the boat's like this. When you make it higher, it's going to be wider. You see? The bottom's not, but the deck will be wider. And we done that. And I had a bigger boat then. Oh, we shrimp with it. I tried to iron back. One day, I was shrimping, so help me God. I was shrimping out there, way out. And I didn't see no other boat. And I pick up, about 1 hour, I pick up a basket and a half and a big shrimp. I threw back over. 1 hour, I pick up another basket. And it got blue towards the northwest. The weather was getting bad. I said, "Maybe I can make another drain before the weather gets here." And I made another drag when I was picking up. I got everything on the deck, the weather hit me. And it was raining. I couldn't see. I couldn't see nothing. So I put the boat straight like that. Do I want it to go? Straight like that. God had to be with me. And I hit that island right in the middle. I was a long ways out. And I had a small boat, 24 feet long. And it had big waves. And I stayed there. But thank God. And I shrimped, all over, and then a trap, and with my daddy, we trapped a Manus Canal, and I had to walk. Vito Perez, you remember Vito Perez? August and Arthur's daddy?
Right.
Okay, all right. I had to cross their land, and then my daddy's land, to be able to get to my land where I was trapping, from Manus Canal. So the following year, they moved to, around to Oak River, that body they called Oak River. They moved to Oak River, and they got a place called Cotton Claw. That's where my grandpa was born. My daddy's daddy, he was born there. And from there to Spanish Lake, they had 35 families in that time. And well, my grandpa, he trapped with my daddy, and then and my grandpa had land over here in Bayou Cipre. They never had many muskrats, so he come with my daddy, and my uncle still trapping over there. And my daddy helped him out, you know, and he helped my daddy too. It was good company. What?
Tell him how you used to hunt alligators.
Well, that's what I was.
Yes,
gonna
ask. I was.
Yes. Well, the alligators.
This is before the season was closed.
This is. They didn't have many alligators. You had to go in the marsh. And we had a pole. We had the pole like this, and on the end of the pole, it was big and come to a point like that. And on the other end, we had a hook. We had a steel hook.
It was a metal hook.
And we had nails around it like this, and the hook was bent on the end, and we drilled a hole there and put the part that was bent there and put nails around it.
Okay.
And the hook this way. So, all right, you steer them out of the hole, looking for the alligator, you find a hole, and you go like this with the pole. Go to the north end or to the south end. He ain't gonna be on the eastern and west side. He's gonna be on the hole gonna be in the north end or the south end. And I went to the north end in the wintertime. When I got in the pole, went in. I said, Papa, this is the hole.
They had air pockets down there, underground.
But let me
put
that was another time. And Papa said, look, I'm gonna joke like that. You take the hatchet with the blunt end, another blunt end, the one you knew it. He said, now you gotta hit him hard now. And he stuck like that, the alligator come out like this. Wow, I hit him on the head, put the hatchet underneath him, grab him, put him on the bank, finish killing him and skin him. Put the skin in the bag, leave the alligator there and the birds and all that needed. And the next time, I don't know if you know Buzo. You know Buzo?
Right.
Buzo. Buzo, daddy, Randy, Brazo. Used to call him Brazo, his nickname. He was married to my aunt, Marcella. Marcella was the name. And we was in a pond, and they had a drag line digging Manus Canal. And he said, over here they got a pond, got 65 living ones in it, like that. And I had a trapping bag on my back. And my daddy and Raymond were trying to get the alligator, and I was catching the living ones, putting them in the right bag. Okay, and Raymond said, Jerry, come here, stand right here by me. And the alligator had, coming out the hole, they had a channel in the ground like that in the mud. And he had a channel this way. And the channel on this side, they had the grass, but it was on top of the channel, and never had, the grass was growing in the water like. And I was standing in the grass there. And Papa, goodness, Raymond is coming out. It was 10 foot. And I'm going up and down. And Raymond said, Jerry, don't move. I said, I'm not moving. He said, don't move. I said, I'm not moving. He said, but you're going up and down. Papa said, oh, look at it come out in the middle of the pond. Raymond said, he passed under Jerry. And he passed under me. Okay. We look at the alligator, and the alligator goes down this way. That one went down like this. Papa said, you know how he went down front ways like that? He went to another hole. So the hole wasn't that deep, and then we went there. And Remy had a big stomach. Remy had the hatchet, and I was standing over here. The alligator comes out, looked that wide, put it up against Remy's stomach. Remy couldn't hit him like that. So I see the alligator's nostril open, not the other. I was looking at him. The alligator went back in the hole. He came out and done the same thing. Next time, he said, Jerry, when it comes out again, I'll give you the hatchet and you jump out the hole, I'm going to grab him. So when he come out like that, Remy give him the hatchet and I jump out. Remy put, and grabbed the alligator's snoot like that and mouth like that and went around him like this. Wow, 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 across the pond. Remy's leg was doing that and the alligator, he wouldn't let him go. He went on the other side of the pond and had that duck grass in there, duck feet. Papa went around there with the pond, around the pond, trying to see Remy's head over the alligator's head. And he got the alligator's head and started hitting and hitting and got him out. That fish killed him. Remy had more mud on him than the alligator. Remy was like an alligator himself.
Now, so, do you remember cutting, sometimes it's called a piro ditch, sometimes it's called a trenaza.
Trenaza?
Yeah, how did you do that? How did you build a trenaza?
They had one of them things, a rake.
Okay.
That, like this, with four or five things going down, stickers going down like this. And you stick it like that on mud, you know, on the dick. And you had to need a shovel too if the ground was hard. But you stick it like that and you pull the mud lump this way and the other guy pulling that way and you made a ditch. Some people call it a trenaza. We call it a saja.
A what?
A saja. In Spanish. Saja. We call it saja in Spanish. Some people call it a trenaza. We don't call it a trenaza. French people call it a trenaza, we call it a saja. And dig the ditch to go to the trapping land where you were trapping. You put the pirog and go to the ditch.
So did y'all put something to keep the tidal water from?
Well, the ditch won't come to the bayou, to the main bayou.
Okay.
You leave it closed there. You don't open that part up. And you leave the pirog by the ditch there when you come from trapping.
Okay.
And the ditch, that way you, the water will stay in the ditch. And my dad used to trap in the edge of the ditch too. And I used to go through the ditch all the way to the end of the ditch and start trapping. Nathan used to trap on that side. Nathan, you remember Nathan, my brother? Nathan used to trap on that side. Bunny trapped in the back. Jesse trapped right on the side of me, but they wasn't good trappers, you know. They never had any trap like I was. Bunny was a mechanic. At the camp. One that fixed the motor and fixed everything. We had a little one cylinder acro motor, a little bitty one, with a generator, with a belt. And start the.
Is that the guy with the big flywheel?
No.
Okay.
Start it with a rope, start it and. And charge the battery for the radio to run. One day Mama was washing with the washboard. Five boys, five pair of pants, and my daddy.
And two cousins.
And we was helping. Me and Bunny used to twist the clothes, you know, twist it. When Mama was washing, I should put it in the tub to rinse it, and me and Bunny twist it and hanging on the line, you know, helping Mama. So one day me and Bunny went to the island. She said, let's go see the washing machine. A ring of time. We look under the washing machine and they had a pen belt with a gun on it. We took the washing machine to the camp and we hooked the pen belt to the little motor and we crank it up. Man, that washing machine was washing, was throwing the water out if we couldn't give the motor enough speed. And the ringer was working too. Mama was so happy. She was so happy. We blocked the washing machine, the leg where it couldn't move. And so we done that and tried to help my mom out, you know.
Right.
Because she needed help.
Well, that was brilliant.
She had no sisters to help out. Mama used to bake the best bread you ever ate. She used to, we had a big pot belly stove, big like that. And it was high on top where you put the pots and all that and stayed the pot. But here he had about 8 covers like this. And here you put the wood on the side and he had an oven in it. Mama used to bake the best bread I ever ate. I mean, she used to take the flour, each cake, baking powder, and work that dough, and put it like that, put a rag over it like that, in the pan, leave it there, and let it rise. The next day, she make the bread. She make the best beignets. Them people don't make good beignets here. She used to make beignets just swell up like that, man.
They called them tortas.
We used to call them tortas. Tortas, we used to call them. And the bread we used to call pan criollo. Mm-hmm. Pan criollo. That's what we call the bread, pan criollo. And we used to take that hot bread, cut a slice and put that butter on it. Ha! And put some coffee and eat that. If we ate a slice of bread and drink 2 cups of coffee, we're good for 2 o'clock in the day.
that coffee, the spoon could stay standing up.
No, it wasn't that strong. Mom used to like it strong, but it wasn't that strong.
Now, when you were, explain to us a day in the life of a trapper. I mean, you got up, and then what did you do for that day?
That day, I went around my trap, first thing in the morning.
All 250?
All 250. Oh, no, you can leave. If you leave somehow without running, and the rat is dead in the trap, and the sun hit it, you got to have a green belly the next day.
Okay.
And you can't have a green belly on the muskrat, because they pass it for tainted rats. You see?
All and, right.
They weren't bad, but it's better for tainted rats. And so we got to run them every day. And every day, every day, rain or shine.
Now, of those 250 traps, how many rats would you normally get in a day?
Well, when I set a trap, I go run, waking my trap, set a trap here, set it where the rat passes, you see? Where the rat passes, that's where you got to set it. Set it where the rat passes. And next day we... If it was a good night, like a frost night, calm night, the rats come out. Now, when the wind blows, the rats don't come out too much when the wind blows. But when it's calm, rats come out. And
what was an average?
Of the 250, when you'd normally make a round, you check your traps.
I guess about 150.
Of the 250? That many?
Yeah, 150 all the time, but with the hot weather and all, you know. Because with the hot weather, you don't catch as much with you catch with the cold weather, Dougie can tell you. And when we trapped, and Harold Robinson used to sell the canes, cane reeds. He used to cut them. My dad used to buy cane from him. He said, Harold, I need some canes. I don't know how many bundles, 100 bundles, he'd bring them.
When you came back in from catching the rats, didn't you start skinning them?
We skin them in the marsh, and we skin them when we get home. To the camp.
Now, when you say skin them in the marsh, you field dry, you gutted them in the marsh? I mean,
no. You skin, you keep the skin. You don't keep the carcass. Mm-hmm. The meat, don't keep the meat, you keep the skin. The skin don't weigh much. And you throw the carcass away, you see? And the birds eat it. Or you throw it in the water, in the pond, the alligators eat it. Mm-hmm. Nothing went to waste.
Now,
from there, you had to put them through the rat ringer.
Oh yeah, we had to take him, bring him in. I got the rat ringer home yet. Take him, bring him in, and wash him in number 3 tub. Wash him real good, and take the bottom lip and the top lip, and put it in the rat ringer and ring it, and all the excess meat will come out the skin. And you pop it like that, and you throw them on the side, then you hang them up, and all the fur dries.
Now, when you hang them up, you turn them inside out?
No. You hang them up, and the fur dries. And you got rat stretchers made like this.
Right.
All right. You turn them inside out then.
Okay.
And you put the rat stretcher in it, and you stretch it real good, and you hang them up there, and they dry, you see? It takes about 3 days to dry good. Sunny days, you know? And then we take them and put them on bunches, 50 to a bunch, pass a wire to the eye, you know, the eye holds that. And I put them in boxes.
Tell them where you stored them. Where you keep them till you sold them?
Well, my daddy was keeping them in his room, him and mama's room.
in your bedroom.
And it's, man.
You must have smelled
it. Oh, I smelled everything. One time, Mama said, we got to go to the island and buy some groceries, buy flour, and oh, we're going to get bread when we're down there, no? Out there. So they went to the island, and the five boys, us, we stood at the camp. And Jesse went to Mama's room and started digging. He said, oh, I got some hoochie boy. All right. He gave me 2 squares. He gave Nathan 2 squares. Stanley 2 squares. And he's greedy. He took 3 squares. And he gave Bonnie 3 squares. And Mom and I come from the camp. I mean, from out there. And we all had a pain in our stomach. I said, I got a pain in my stomach, Mama. Well, Mama said, I cook red beans and rice. You shouldn't have pain in your stomachs. What y'all ate? Nothing but the hoochie boy you had there. And it was act like. It was act like, Mama. Mama said, they won. They had a slap joint the camp, and they had an outdoor toilet, and we were going back and forth. It was something. And Nathan was, he used to like to drink a little bit, and he used to like to fight. When he goes somewhere, Nathan used to fight. Nathan used to hit his arm, you know, he had a big arm like that. He used to hit his arm like a mule. He wasn't that tall, but he was stocky, and he could handle himself. So I said, Nathan, let's go in. You're going to get drunk here. You got to get in a fight. You might get all busted up. He said, Jerry, I'll never get busted up. I said, let's go home. You got to run your trap tomorrow and all that. Mama said, come on home. Mama was the boss. Not Papa. Mama was the boss. Mama said, come home. You tell Mama she want me to come home for her to come and get me. So I went all the way to Connell Clough out there from the island. With a big Papa's big boat, 2.5 hours there. I told Mama I wanted. I bought a roast beef for all of us, each one of us. Okay. I told Mama, I said, Nathan said, if you want him to come home, for you to come and get him. And she was eating the roast beef like that. I said, well, whatever happens to him, he deserves it. She took the roast beef, she threw it in the yard. So help me God. She took the roast beef that I bought and she threw it in the yard. I said, Lord, look at this. I would have never thought that. And my mom won't do that. And I still think my mom used to like the other boys more than she liked me. I was the oldest one. I caught all the hell. Oh, yeah. I used to go with my daddy. I was a little boy hunting. He'd go hunting. I used to go with him. In the P-Rod. I was a little boy and he shoot. I could never tell you the day my daddy missed a duck. I could never tell you. I'd never seen my daddy miss a duck. My daddy was like my grandpa. And he told me, he said, look, when you see a flock of ducks coming, let's say five or six, you look at them when they get over the decoy. When they get in a bunch, they look like one, that's when you shoot. You get in a bunch. You can't see through them like that. That's when you shoot. And that's how I learned. And, but now you can shoot that. Well, that time the game wasn't never used to bother you, you know. You go up there 15, 20 ducks. They won't bother you. We bring them home. We pluck them. And in the back of the camp, it was cool in the back of the camp. On the ground, under the camp, we used to put them with the belly down after we got them in that. And cover them up, and if they cool.
What would you cover them with?
What?
What would you put on top of? You said you'd cover them.
Put a piece of rag on top of them.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And like that, and nothing touched them. And we used to eat ducks every day. Pool those, you know what pool those is? One day, me and Nathan was going hunting, and Jerry came with lamb, sneaking in the land behind a deer, and they had deer there. And I had buckshot. I had a double barrel shotgun, and I won a gun by R.C. Campbell, an Ithaca pump gun. You remember that Ithaca pump gun?
Yes.
Okay. I won one like that. So Nate used to like the Ithaca Pumpkin. And I had a double barrel. And we're going tracking a deer. And the pool doors were like that. Oh, look at the pool door. We only got buckshot. I said, no, I got 5 buckshot, 5 7.5 shot, triple out. One of the trees going in, you put two. And we got the pool doors going over one another like that. They were so thick. Pop, 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 and shot. Nathan went in the water, picking them up. They pick up 65. And the cripple was, I don't know how many cripples they had. And I took my belt off, and I passed the belt to the thing like that. And I got the pool door by the neck, and put him in, and squeezed him like that. Nate done the same thing. And we were throwing them, dragging the pool door, and we had the gun for the P-Rob. He said, now we know how to kill no deer. And my man was at the camp. My dad is bomber, my man. Oh, she loved the pool door. When we come there with the pool door, oh man, she was in my glory. She was at, then we used to gut the pool door, they pluck them. And they're hard to pluck, but they're hard, they pluck them. And my man with that, check, 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 and my daddy too, my mama too. And the gizzard of the pool doors is like that, you see. We clean the gizzard, see, take them and clean it on the outside and cut it open and clean the inside out. And mama used to make a gumbo with that. Filet gumbo, huh. And cook a pot of rice and cook that. Oh, that was good. And she used to take the duck, she roast them in a big pot, big iron pot. She roast 9, 10 of them. And we had Curtis with us, Curtis Campion, you remember Curtis Campion? Yeah. Well, Curtis was with us because my uncle died, you see. And my aunt was by herself raising the other 5 kids. And Curtis was the oldest one. And we had him at the camp. My daddy used to help him out, give him some money to give to his mama, you know. That was my daddy's sister. And so we helped him out. And then we had Curtis.
Ronnie.
And Sidney Morales.
Yeah.
Morales, yeah. And Sidney Morales, he had a son named Sidney too, so we used to call him Sidney. And he was the oldest son. Oh, he used to work. Oh, he used to prep hard. He used to work. And my daddy had them all. They all worked hard. And my daddy gave him money for them to give to mom and daddy. Chilao, he wasn't catching many rats, and what he was catching, he was gambling all the money. The Boston Joe and all them people used to come to the island and with sacks of money, and Chilao used to gamble the money. And Uncle Nanny, his name was Joseph, they called him Nanny, a mad to my boy. And, well, he had a son-in-law named Blaine. Blaine used to be in the Navy. And Uncle Nanny was shooting dice. He used to gamble too, shooting dice. But Tony Miller, he said, Blaine, shoot dice. Crap. Uncle Nanny kicked him in the head. Pop! He said, get out of here.
Back then, the families used to stick together and help each other.
Yeah. Well, then when Sidney had rats, July had rats, then I went trapping with him. He gave me 40 traps. I was getting 33 rats every day. And he had some snap traps and some that I didn't catch none in. And my daddy kept trapping for the company, for the Delacroix Corporation, because they never had enough rats for me to stay. So what I was making there, I was giving to my daddy and my mom. Every penny I made, I gave it to my daddy and my mom till the day I got married. Well,
tell him how you used to court Irma. This is his first wife.
My first wife. I used to
swim down there.
We had a boat. My dad had a boat named the New Wonder. I used to go. Well, at first, when I went to see her, she lived across the bayou, like I used to live, but further off the road. And we went, and she was pushing a little three-wheel bike with the kids on top, you know, playing with the kids. I said, well, I'm coming to see this girl, look what she's doing. So
he told me he used to swim down the bayou too to go visit us.
Well, let me tell you, no,
when he didn't hear the boat.
In the first time. And well, we went there. I said, Grandma, what you doing? And she kind of liked me. You know, she stopped doing what she was doing. So I kept going across the bayou and see her. Kept going to see her. So I finally was taking her to the show. They had a theater on that Stanley's Theater. Taking her to the show and bringing her back home. And Arthur, my cousin, Arthur Perez, August's brother, he was married to a girl named Lorraine. And he was renting a little house from Shorty. I forget his last name. Well, anyhow, he was a short guy. And Arthur had, I used to take his boat, his crab boat, and used to go across the bayou to go see my girlfriend. So one day, I'm going to take the crab boat, and that rope is going under the house like that. And I'm pulling on the rope. And it would come up at that much. Pulling on the rope. And Lorraine, the rope was tied to the foot of the bed. And I pulled on the rope. Lorraine said, Arthur, the rope is moving. And Arthur come out there and said, Jerry, what you doing? I said, man, your rope is hooked down there somewhere. He said, it's tied to the foot of my bed. Wait, I'm up on time.
He wanted to see who was taking this boat.
No, the kid was taking the boat across the bayou. And at night, and when he wanted to go fish crab the next day, the boat was on the other side of the bayou. He couldn't go.
Well, this has been real good. We wonder, Mr. Dookie, can we ask him to sit right here, please?
Sure.
Yeah.
We'd like for you to join us and talk a little bit, please.
Okay.
We have a couple of things we need to talk over, but the two of you can maybe kibitz a bit, because there are important stories that you can probably tell us. We want to do this for about 30 more minutes, and then we're going to have to drive back, in my case, Baton Rouge, and Carl has to go to Lafayette. First of all, the two of you met us once before at your son's house. You were putting up the new building and you were going dancing a Thursday night. We don't really have an agenda. We're both...
Yeah. Hello.
It's off.
No.
Yeah, Brad. I'm with them.
I can turn it off.
Watch.
No, we can turn it off.
My son finally didn't take the fine out if I'm with you.
Ah.